Let's open in the book of Haggai to chapter 2. We'll read from verse 10 to the end of the chapter. There are four main prophecies, four times that Haggai speaks. The first time is in chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. That's the first day of the sixth month. And then the second prophecy is in the first verses of chapter 2, 1 through 9. That's in the 21st day of the seventh month, so that's a month and 21 days later. And then in verses 10 through 19 of chapter 2 is the third prophecy in the 24th day of the ninth month, so about 2 months after the previous one, about 4 months after the first prophecy. And tonight we'll look at the last prophecy in verses 20 through 23, which is spoken on the same day as the third prophecy. So we'll read the third and the fourth prophecies. Haggai 2, verse 10, in the 24th day of the ninth month, in the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts." And just something on that title, notice how many times designation is given to God as we read. "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priests concerning the law, saying, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with the skirt do touch bread or pottage or wine or oil or any meat, shall it be holy? And the priest answered and said, no. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, saith the Lord, and so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer there is unclean. And now, I pray you, consider from this day and upward, from before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord, since those days were, when one came to an heap of 20 measures, there were but 10. When one came to the press vat for to draw out 50 vessels out of the press, there were but 20. I smote you with blasting and with mildew and with hail in all the labor of your hands, yet ye turn not to me, saith the Lord. Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the ninth month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, as yet the vine and the fig tree and the pomegranate and the olive tree hath not brought forth. From this day will I bless you." And again the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 24th day of the month, saying, "Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, everyone by the sword of his brother. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and I will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts." We come tonight to the fourth and final word that Haggai brings to the returned captives who are busy with the building of the temple of God in Jerusalem. There are four words that Haggai brings, and we can categorize them this way. The first one and the third one are similar, and the second and the fourth one are similar. In the first one and in the third one, Haggai calls the people in their present situation to do something. In the second one and in the fourth one, Haggai holds before them a promise and brings them predictions, and especially the prediction and the promise of the shaking of the heavens and the earth and the coming of the Messiah. So in the second prophecy, I will shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land, and the desire of all nations shall come, Christ. And in these verses again, we have a shaking. and ultimately a word and a promise concerning Christ, a signet. I will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord. Now these prophecies, all four of them, are intended to encourage the builders in Jerusalem who face opposition, who have made great sacrifice, who don't have the resources that they would like to be able to build the temple that was something like Solomon's temple. They're small in number. Their work seems vain. They look at this temple and God even calls attention to it, and it seems as nothing compared to the temple of Solomon. And the prophet comes to them to encourage them, not just to call them to keep working, but to encourage them. And we saw that last week in the call to holy-hearted dedication. And God says to them, in his encouragement to them, I'm with thee. And God says to them, look at the promises. Look at the promises. You're building much more than you can see. And I'm doing something much greater than just what you see in your day. So God says the glory of this house will be greater than that of the former of Solomon's house. And he's speaking of the glory of the New Testament church. These last verses from verses 20 through 23, which we consider tonight, are also intended to encourage. But these ones are spoken not to all of the returned captives, not even to the leaders generally, right? Usually these were spoken to Joshua, the high priest, and Zerubbabel, the ruler. Or in the previous one, they were spoken to the priests, and we said that was probably done in a very public setting so that everybody could hear what the prophet said. Now Haggai comes with a word just to Zerubbabel, the governor. And that is important because really this word, I said it's a promise and a prophecy of Christ, but it's also a word that's spoken to Christ, to encourage him in the work of building. He says in Matthew 16, I will build my church. He knows that primarily the building of that church requires this, that he goes to the cross to redeem his people and to overcome Satan and sin. And we know that in the hour of his suffering, he needed the encouragement of Jehovah. And here we have it. My signet ring. My signet ring. The gates of hell he speaks of. And this promise is a promise of victory to Christ and in him to the church, to us as temple builders. And what it does is it takes the worry and the success of the work that we're involved in from our hands and really puts it in the hands of our leader, Jesus Christ, who is Jehovah's signet. The battle is the Lord's. That's why he says, the gates of hell shall not prevail, and I will build my church. So let's consider tonight, encouraged by the promise of Jehovah's signet. Notice first with me the promise, second the fulfillment, and then third the encouragement. Encouraged by the promise of Jehovah's signet. These verses are filled with promise. You see that in the words, I will, five times. I will shake the heavens and the earth. I will overthrow the kingdoms. I will destroy the strength of kings. I will overthrow the chariots. And I will take thee, O Zerubbabel, and make thee as a signet. I will. That's not Haggai speaking, but that's Jehovah speaking. And Jehovah giving promise. And those promises here culminate and they center on that final promise, I will take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee." We want tonight especially to try to understand those words. What is a signet? Boys and girls, you can understand this. A signet is a ring that the king wore, usually on his finger or sometimes on a chain around his neck. And we'll talk about that a little more in a little while. What is a signet? Well, there's two things for us to understand about a signet. The word signet here is really a symbolic word. Jehovah's not going to make Zerubbabel into a ring that he puts around his finger, but there's symbolism here. And the symbolism is taken from a king and the ring that a king would wear around his finger. What was that ring? Well, that ring, first of all, was a sign of his authority. And that ring was to be exercised only and used only at the king's command. We have in the Bible, and you boys and girls will remember this story, a story that helps us to understand the importance of a signet. You find that in Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. This is the story of Joseph. Joseph is in prison. Joseph in prison has told the dreams of the butler and the baker. The butler goes back to work for Pharaoh. And for 2 years, the butler forgets all about Joseph in prison until Pharaoh has a dream and he remembers, I had a dream. And there was a man in prison who told me the meaning of that dream. And they send for Joseph, and Joseph tells Pharaoh the meaning of his dreams. And then we read this in Genesis 41, verse 7. The thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, "Can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is?" He's talking about Joseph. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "As much as show thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou." And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt." So Pharaoh gives to Joseph this exalted position over all the affairs of Egypt. And then Pharaoh does something to symbolize that. Verse 42, "And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand," that's his signet, "and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck." And what's important there is especially that Pharaoh gave his ring to Joseph. That was a ring of authority. Now you say, how is there authority in a ring? Well, that ring had a stone on it. That's what the signet was. The signet was a stone. And that stone was a hard object which would have engraved into it a unique engraving that would become a stamp. And that unique engraving was either the national symbol or the king's signature. And nobody was allowed to duplicate that engraving. If you duplicated that engraving, you faced execution. And so after a law had been written or a letter had been written, the king's ring would be used to emboss that law, emboss that letter. Not how it's done today by imprinting it into the paper, if you, for example, get a stamp from a justice of the peace, but usually our scroll was sealed with wax seals, and then the king's stamp was put on those wax seals. And that meant that the scroll contained the word and the authority, the law of the king. That was the authority that was given to Joseph in Egypt. And now, whenever Joseph made a law or wrote a letter, he could seal it with the king's seal, and the people knew it came with the authority of the king. And so the prophet says to Zerubbabel, "My signet, Jehovah's signet. The most exalted position of authority. So, first, the signet represented authority. Second, the signet represented something that was very precious, protected. Protected with the life of the king himself. And the signet is called a ring sometimes, not so much because it was a ring that was placed around the king's finger, but because usually the signet was a cylinder that was embossed on the outside or engraved on the outside, and then that cylinder could be rolled over the wax seals. Maybe with Play-Doh you've had a rolling pin with patterns on it, something like that. And then that cylinder would be placed on a chain around the king's neck, close to the king's heart. And if the king lost everything else, if his palace burned down in the night and he had to escape in his pajamas, the only thing he would have with him was that signet ring. So important was it. It represented the authority of the law of the land. And so it was protected. If it got in the wrong hands, then the wrong people would be making laws, and those laws would be destructive. You remember when Daniel prayed and the other rulers in the land went to King Nebuchadnezzar, and the king made a rule that Daniel could not pray except to him. And the king embossed that law, and that law was the law of the Medes and the Persians, a law that couldn't be changed. So that signet ring, as it were, got in the wrong hands. So it was very protected. So the promise in the text to Zerubbabel is, I will take thee, Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, Jehovah, and will make thee as a signet. Will give you authority and will protect you. That's the promise. Now, what an encouragement that is for Zerubbabel. He's the leader here. There is with him Joshua, who is the high priest. Zerubbabel and Joshua, the two leaders. There are the prophets who speak. The prophets are Haggai and Zechariah. But there's a very small band. And there's trouble. There's trouble among the people themselves. They've returned from captivity about 17 or 18 years prior to this. And they've had, during this time, a very bad attitude towards the building of the house of God and the work of the Lord. And there's a lack of holiness that's developing among them and a lack of commitment. And then besides that, there is the threat from those without the nations. The Samaritan leaders around them threaten them. They're actually the ones who stopped the work for a while by writing a letter to the Persian king. And now they're called back to this work again. And the Samaritans are gathering around again. They're getting suspicious. And we read in Ezra that when this work started, immediately Tatnai the neighboring governor, attempts to stop them, and he writes letters again. And you know that backfires on him, and he's called to support the work. And then besides this, not just the internal things or the attacks upon them from those around them and the enmity against them in the work that they're doing, but more broadly, there is a political unrest in the nations. And that political unrest, we know, is going to have a direct effect on the life and the existence of these returned captives in the promised land. They know that. They know that from the prophecies of Daniel, especially. You remember the vision of the image with five different parts that represent five different kingdoms. And then Daniel speaks more specifically of those kingdoms in his prophecies with the different visions that he brings. And he speaks of a time when there will come one called the abomination of desolation into the temple of God. So here they are building the temple, and there's going to be idol worship in the temple. They're discouraged. They could easily be discouraged. And now, this word comes to Zerubbabel. My signet, authority and protection. I say a wonderful encouragement that is to Zerubbabel. In the previous verses, verse 22, especially, but 21 as well, God speaks of some of what this will look like. He says, I will shake the heavens and the earth and will overthrow the throne of kingdoms and destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen. And I will overthrow their chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one of them, by the sword of his brother. And you see there a description of the war and the turmoil. But Jehovah's promise there that the battle is his. And the words here, the promises in verse 22 are reminiscent of different parts of Israel's history when they had great victories. These two events especially, I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them. And now you remember Israel under Moses crossing through the Red Sea and Pharaoh and his chariots, the wheels coming off them and the floodwaters coming over them, and they're perishing in the sea. And God is saying, this is how I will deal with your enemies. The other one, everyone will die by the sword of his brother. And now we think of Gideon and his 300 men. And you know how they went to battle? No swords, just lights and pitchers and trumpets. And they surrounded the great camp of the Midianites, 132,000 people, soldiers, prepared for war. They blew their trumpets and they broke their pitchers. And there was confusion in the camp of the Midianites, and they died, 120,000 of them, every one of them, by the sword of his brother. And now God is saying, Zerubbabel, Judah, regardless of who is in charge politically, the Lord is in control. He sits on the throne, and he promises this to Zerubbabel. You'll have the ascendancy. Psalm 75, verse 7, God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. Proverbs 21, verse 1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. And Zerubbabel and the people can know from this promise that God will work all things for the sake of his people who he's brought back into the land of promise. And they'll live through all the political turmoil and the conflicts because God will keep his promise. When all the kingdoms of the earth are shaken, right? I will shake. And when they all come crashing down, what will ascend from the ashes is the church and the people of God. And that's the comfort for us too. We have concerns. Concerns for the church and the well-being of the church. Concerns for children and coming generations. Concerns because of who is in government and policies and laws and politicians who hate God and hate the Word of God and hate the Christian church and the Christian faith. And we see conflict between the nations of the earth and political turmoil, and it continues. And God is saying, I'm over all this. I'm over all this. And in fact, Jesus teaches us that the wars and the rumors of the wars are an important way that he continues the history of the world so that the cause of the gospel can continue to the ends of the earth and the church can be built by the preaching of the gospel. That's why there's political turmoil in the world. And it's only at the end of time when the kingdoms of the earth come together under the Antichrist that war will, as it were, die down for a little while. God is on the throne. That's the idea. And that's emphasized here in the name, Lord of Hosts. Right? The last words of this prophecy, saith the Lord of hosts. And those words are like a chorus that comes back again and again throughout this prophecy, 15 times. You find those words in this short book of 2 chapters. And maybe there were some, perhaps the children, who couldn't understand everything that Haggai was saying or didn't remember it later on. But there was one thing they would remember, and it was this, that Haggai spoke of Jehovah as Jehovah of hosts. Jehovah of hosts. Sovereign. He's the God of the heavens and the hosts of the heavens, but Jehovah of hosts is the God over all the hosts of the earth, sovereign over all. As Jehovah, the faithful God, the covenant God. And if they would remember nothing else, this would ring in their ears, Jehovah of hosts. And so we need not fear. Protection. Ascendancy, authority, and protection. I will shake the heavens and the earth. Verse 21, we recognize those words from the promise of the coming of the desire of all nations earlier in this chapter. The shaking of all nations refers to the judgment of God in the day of the Lord, which is the day that begins with the first coming of Christ. And it's a shaking of the foundations of the nations, a spiritual shaking. When Christ comes to the cross, you know that his teaching and that his work shook the Jewish leaders. It shook the Roman Empire. It shook the works of darkness and the kingdom of Satan. And the shaking will culminate, Hebrews 12, in a final shaking at the return of Jesus Christ. And then all that has no substance because it doesn't know Christ will be shaken off. And the elect, the church of God, like the kernel of grain in the chaff, will stand and the chaff will be blown away. And God is saying, I'll protect you. I'll keep you close to my heart. When everything else is destroyed, you'll still be like that precious jewel around my neck. That's the promise here to Zerubbabel, to Judah, to the remnant, to the New Testament church, to us, in the day in which we also live. The prophet gives a reason for God's doing this. In the last phrase, or the last section of the last verse, for I have chosen thee. That word for is a reason. Why is God going to make Zerubbabel a signet? Why protect his people? Why? And the answer is election. For I have chosen thee. It's interesting, as you look at this character, Zerubbabel, there's not much said about him in the scriptures. We don't know anything really about his character or his accomplishments. We just know that he was the son of Shealtiel, and if we look at the Gospel of Matthew chapter 1, we see that he was in the royal line of Christ. But not much else. But here, a very beautiful thing is said, I have chosen thee. What that speaks of is that Zerubbabel is chosen by God. He is the elect, chosen, not on account of anything that he is in himself, but simply on account of the goodness, the sovereign goodness of God in election. That's what God calls attention to there in that word. He chose Zerubbabel, and he chose this people, Judah, according to his own sovereign goodness. They are small. They are despised. Who is the Zerubbabel? And yet God says, here, this is why you can be certain the promise will stand. For I have chosen thee. And what this speaks to is that God is determined to save a people in Jesus Christ, or determined to save and gather his elect church in Jesus Christ. And I say Jesus Christ because when we hear this promise in the last verse of the chapter to Zerubbabel, it isn't really a promise to Zerubbabel. It's a promise about Christ, and it's a promise to Christ. Just as God spake to David of the seed of his loins who would sit forever on a throne, that's what God is really saying here to Zerubbabel. Not you, Zerubbabel, yourself will have ascendancy, and your and the nation will be established under you. That never happened. But this is calling the people to look at what line Zerubbabel falls in. He's the son of Shealtiel, and Matthew calls attention to that. And he's in the royal line of David, the house of David, and the royal line of Jesus Christ. And there are two words in the text that are a part of that prophecy. I will take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant. The son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee. We can put those two words together. Chosen servant. Elect servant. And with those two words, we have a prophecy of Jesus Christ. Turn back to Isaiah chapter 42, and we see this because this is one of the, in the prophets, especially in Isaiah, but in all the prophets, this is one of the outstanding and most common designations concerning the Messiah. Isaiah 42, verse 1, behold, my servant, whom I uphold, my elect, or my chosen, in whom my soul delighteth. And you see the two things again, my chosen and my servant. And that, of course, speaks of Jesus Christ. And what God is saying here to Zerubbabel, who is of the house and the line of David, is this: I will reestablish the line of David and the promise of the Son that will sit on the throne forever. And I say reestablish because the words of our text concerning Zerubbabel as a signet are in contrast to words that were spoken to Jeconiah, the grandfather of Zerubbabel. And you read about that in Jeremiah chapter 22 and verse 24. Jeremiah 22, verse 24, as I live, saith the Lord, though Kaniah or Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet upon my right hand, yet would I pluck thee thence. God is saying, I'm going to take this ring off my hand and throw it away. And as he brings the royal line into the captivity of Babylon, it seems as though that's what he's done. He's taken this signet ring, this protected line, this authority that belonged to the house of David, and discarded of it, plucked it off his hand. These men were wicked men, Jehoiakim and Jeconiah. And it looked like the line was done. In fact, there was one more king after them who wasn't even in that line. That was Zedekiah. He was a brother to the older one of these two. And now God is saying, Jeremiah said, I threw that ring, that signet, in the dirt. And now, Zerubbabel, I'm going to put it back on your hand. Because the line of David will continue. The promise of Christ is here. And the Davidic promises to to have a son, a royal son, who would sit on his throne, are committed now to Zerubbabel and to his generations. This man Zerubbabel disappears into oblivion. He's only mentioned one other place than in the book of Haggai, and that's in the book of Ezra when the temple was completed. He dies without seeing this promise fulfilled. It's certainly not fulfilled in him. But this is how they died in the Old Testament. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and being persuaded of them. They were confident. And that's the encouragement to Zerubbabel here and to Judah. Christ is coming. And that gives substance to these other promises in this book. I'm with you. And the desire of the nations will come, and I'll fill this house with a greater glory. Christ is coming. That's the promise of the signet. And I say these words are spoken about Christ, but when Christ comes, these are words spoken also to him. Because you notice that's the way it's put here in verse 23, not I will take thy offspring, Zerubbabel, but I will take thee, O Zerubbabel. And I will make thee a signet. And that's a promise to Christ. Zerubbabel stands here really as a type in the line of David and ruler of Christ. These words are spoken to him to encourage him, but these are words that are spoken concerning Jesus Christ, the Messiah. A little earlier we sang from Psalm 2, and the thoughts are almost parallel in that psalm to what we have here. The heathen rage, the kings and the rulers take counsel together. Here's what's going on around Jerusalem at the time of Zerubbabel. He that sits in heaven shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision, throwing the chariots over and the riders and the men killing each other. He'll speak to them in his wrath. I have set my king on my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. Thou art my son. This day have I begotten thee. That's a promise to Christ of authority and of protection. And then comes at the end of the chapter the great warning, doesn't it? Serve the Lord with fear. Rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and ye perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. You see, it's a promise concerning the son of David who would sit on the throne of his eternal kingdom. And how is that fulfilled? Well, that's fulfilled today in the exaltation of Jesus Christ. And so Christ, during his earthly ministry, had these promises. You think of when he needed this encouragement, when in the hour of suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane, he went towards the cross and the suffering of the cross, and the kings and the rulers of the earth were moved against him. The world was against him. His own forsook him. A signet. Protected. That's the promise. And that's fulfilled in Ephesians 1, when Christ is raised from the dead and set at God's right hand in heavenly places, far above all principality and power and might and dominion and every name that is named, not only in this world, but in the world to come, and has all things under his feet and is given to be head over all things to the church. Authority. And what did God do when he brought Christ to that highest position, exalted the mediator? It was as though he took his signet ring from his hand and he gave it to Christ. He said, you have authority in heaven and in earth. And 1 Corinthians 15 tells us that he works now to subdue all things to himself. And when he's done that, he'll give the kingdom, deliver the kingdom to the Father. That's the promise here. And it's encouragement for Christ but also encouragement for us and for the church. Remember, we're building. Remember what that building is. Christ is building the church. The church is the temple of the living God. And Christ is pleased in this building to employ us, as it were, in the great building project. Just as Judah was busy here building this temple in Jerusalem and later the walls of the city, so we are employed in the great endeavor of New Testament history in the building, the gathering of the church of Jesus Christ. And he gives to each of us not just a place as a stone in that building, but a task as builders in that building project. We build by obedience and holiness. Those are the two things that he calls us to in this prophecy. In whatever station, and we've emphasized faithfulness, fellowship, finances, very real ways that we show our commitment to the life of the church that we're a part of. Faithfulness, fellowship, finances. And this word should encourage us as people to action. Whatever the work is, it is of great significance. You see, you look at this temple, and what is it compared to the temple of Solomon, says Haggai? Isn't it in your sight as nothing? And so often that's how the work that we're busy involved in seems to us. It seems so small, it can seem so insignificant. A mother in the work that she's busy with her children in the home, a church that's very small, that seems to hardly have a voice or a name. And what does the scripture tell us? Let's not grow weary in well-doing. Lift up the hands that hang down. Strengthen the feeble knees. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Cast your bread upon the waters. They that sow in tears shall reap with joy. Despise not the day of small things. And so our work is the Lord's work. Press on. That's the thrust of the promise and the prophecy of Haggai. And we do that in the hope of the coming of Christ. That's the promise that's repeated to Judah. And it's repeated to Judah, and its fulfillment is repeated to Judah, not just as the day of the first coming of Jesus Christ, but the day of the Lord and the day of the glory of the New Testament church, which will be a glory greater than the temple of Solomon. And the coming of Jesus Christ is spoken of in this prophecy as a shaking of heaven and earth, a coming of the desire of nations, a filling of the temple and the church of God with his glory. And he comes to, Christ does, to build, not just to build the church, but to finalize the building project, to bring the church triumphant into its triumphant state, to bring the church militant and the church triumphant together, to defeat every foe of his church, to gather every one of his elect, to fill his church with his glory, so that she'll be like the New Jerusalem coming down from God out of heaven. There'll be no need of a temple there because God himself will be there and the Lamb will be there and there'll be the light of that place. And there'll be no more sorrow or sighing or tears or pain or suffering. All these things have passed away. Behold, all things made new. And that's the promise that's held before us and in the hope of which we labor in the Lord's work. And now we can think of a parallel promise as Jesus leaves his disciples, leaves them with the great task of building, go ye into all the world and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, the Great Commission. And then he says this, lo, or behold, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. And all power, all authority, there's a signet, is given to me in heaven and in earth. So God is saying, I have taken him. He is my signet. All authority is his. And he will protect his people till he comes again and makes all things new. Amen.